Bedrosian throws to Sandberg, and the pitch is grounded to second base. Thompson has it, throws to first. It's over. 27 years of waiting have come to an end. The Giants have won the pennant.
Welcome back to Thompson to Clark after yet another really horrible week in Giants baseball.
Ended on a good note, though, right?
Did it. Thank you to Logan Webb. And a broken bat single that scored three runs. Caught the Marlins sleeping a little there.
Yeah.
Adames was like, oh, you're going to throw to second base while I'm about to turn the corner here on third. Well, I'm going.
Yeah.
Yes, that was a nice win. It's just one of those where you're just like, man, like, and this is why baseball is hard, but if you could do 75% of that consistently, they're a better team. And sure, they do that like 25% of the time. And that's why they are who they are right now. It was nice to see Logan Webb get a victory. Poor Justin Verlander got jacked again. And it, you know, I think earlier in the season, rightfully so, Verlander was not getting victories, but he's pitched really well lately. And they just can't score any runs, and that's the whole name of the game there. We're not going to sit here and cry and moan about this team, by the way. The whole theme of this show.
We did last week.
We did.
And the week
before, I think.
And the week before. Yeah.
The whole theme to this week is we understand who they are. We know all of the scars, all of the bumps and the bruises. We've gone over this ad nauseum. We're going to try and look from a perspective of like, okay, all that being said, what are some positive things about this team? And we'll do that in a second. But this was, you know, I think Brad and I were just frustrated all week watching them lose. And then he was like, you know what? We need to do a segment where we do like a shrinking episode from Apple TV. Great show, by the way. I think that was our favorite show of the year, was Shrinking.
That was a great show. Denise and I just, it had been on my list for a long time. I really like Jason Segel. Love Harrison Ford, obviously. We're Star Wars guys.
Yep.
So I was really looking forward to that, and I was not disappointed. I mean, completely hooked from episode one. So highly recommend if anybody has Apple TV Plus out there.
And I think season three is already wrapped, so we'll see when season three debuts.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's do it here. We're going to do therapy time for Giants fans. All right, that was some namaste music for everybody. Like some woosah music.
There we go.
Since you had the idea for the episode or for the segment, why don't you kick it off? And why don't you give me something that you're looking at glass half full when it comes to this baseball team and their future?
Yeah, and you kind of have to. And I kind of touched on that a little bit last week or the week before. Something I don't mind. And again, we're longtime Giants fans. Longtime Giants fans. We've been through ups and downs. We've seen it all. I mean, shoot, we were fans when the Giants lost 100 games. Mm-hmm. So we've seen it all, and we've been there. One thing I don't mind about seasons like this is you get to kind of see I get excited about the offseason because I know that there's going to be movement, especially with Buster Posey. This is really, truly his first offseason because he's had a full season as head of baseball operations. And then he's going to go into next season fresh. He's been there before. He's seen it. He knows what this team needs. And he's really going to go try to get it. Now, whatever players he gets in the offseason, they're going to be probably big ticket items, right? I mean, we got Willy Adames. He traded for Devers. There's probably going to be some big ticket items. So what I like to do in a season like this is really find those gems, find those guys who are starting to perform well second half of the season, and you start to get a little excited, and you start to think about, well, what type of role can this player have on next season's team? And one of those bright spots is Christian Koss. And he's really come on lately. You know, with Chapman being hurt, he's going to be playing some third base. Tyler Fitzgerald is up. He's going to be playing second base. But Christian Kos can really play third base. He can play second base. Probably play a little bit of short and spell Willy Adames. So we really need a guy who's a super utility guy. And maybe he can even work on some outfield stuff in the offseason, play a little outfield too. But when you look at his numbers this year, and this is his first year in the bigs, 27 years old. Can he repeat this next year? I don't know. He looks like a gamer. He's getting the shots. He's got 135 plate appearances this season in 53 games. And that's given him in just 53 games, a 1.3 WAR, which is pretty amazing. You know, when you think about it, 3 home runs, 18 ribs, 281 batting average, OPS plus of 111. That's the type of guy. Can he start at second base? Can he be your full-time second baseman? I'd rather have somebody else. Right. I'd rather have a guy like Christian Kos who can, you can plug in, and he could be that guy who's going to pop in, and you know, he's going to give you maximum effort, and you know, he's going to give you good at bats. And, you know, with an aging infield like Willy Adames and Matt Chapman, they're going to need some more days off here and there.
You said aging, and Giants fans were like, wait, didn't we just sign them this year?
well, we did, but they're on the backside. You know, they're on the backside of, I guess you should say, youthful. They're on the back. I'm not going to call them old. I'm saying technically
they should be in their prime.
Yeah.
But at near the end of their deal they're going to get older before the end of the deal, more than likely.
Exactly. And when you've got a guy like Kos, you can plug him in. He can do some different things for you. So that's one of my bright spots, my therapeutic bright spots. I like to see when he's in the lineup. I get excited because I like to watch his at-bats. You know, there's some rough ones here and there. He'll have a strikeout here and there. I'm trying to look at his strikeout numbers. 32 strikeouts and 135 plate appearances. Not a fantastic clip, but again, not absolutely horrible. Only 6 walks, but he is putting the ball in play. He is getting some knocks. So if he can cut down on the walks and have a little bit of a better eye, and again, he's got the rest of the season to work on that, another 6 weeks or so, and he's got the offseason to work, and he's got spring training to work as well. So I think he could be a pretty vital super utility role for the Giants next season.
I wanted to intertwine two things here.
Okay.
One of the things that we found this year, and it's been really the last 2 or 3 years, is their inability to get at to have an athletic team at the risk of or the offsetting athleticism for trying to find contributors in the middle of the order. And so thus you get Wilmer Flores and Jock Peterson on the same baseball team and Rafael Devers on the same baseball team. And because you're trying to figure out how to score runs and drive in runs. And on the flip side, you're also not athletic at all. And one of the things that I found to be a nice breath of fresh air, and it's more in the vein of like the backup role for you. I don't know what Dom Smith's future is for the Giants, but if you go into it next year and you're like, hey, we got this young kid and we want to, you know, if he doesn't start with the ball club, and this we can start the Bryce Eldridge conversation here too. If Bryce doesn't begin the season on the roster, unless something bad happens, I imagine he's going to be on the roster at some point next season.
Right.
Dom Smith, veteran, left-handed bat, good, possibly good mentor. We don't know if he is that or not, but he is also somebody you could stick on the roster and be like, you know what? If he comes back and he plays with us and he's got to play every 6 or 7 games, you're completely fine with it. The problem is when he's got to play every 3 out of 4 games. That's when he kind of gets exposed a little bit. So if Bryce Eldridge comes up next year and is the starting first baseman, you have this veteran behind him, a veteran who has a 15-game hitting streak on the team right now, and he's not playing every day, so he's got some of this is in pinch hitting opportunities. I like the fact that they found somebody who he wasn't there to be the everyday first baseman of a playoff club, and you sort of understood that. But I think he's a good vet to have in case next year they are able to find some starters in positions where you create these other opportunities. I don't think, I wouldn't be excited if he had to play a lot next year, but I think he's a really, really solid bat and veteran presence on a winning baseball team. It's kind of like what we were talking about with Yaz. If Yaz was your fourth outfielder, he'd be so great. And he has value even as a starting outfielder. He does have value. It is harder to see when he hits 220 or 230. Right. But as a fourth outfielder, he'd probably be one of the most popular players on the team because he wouldn't be exposed playing every day, at least his bat, because his glove is so solid. Same with Dom. I think if Dom is a bench player and he comes in and he gets a couple of opportune base hits here and there, supports Bryce Eldridge, maybe even plays as a bit of a defensive replacement when they need it sometimes, I think he's going to be very valuable. You just have to find the right spot. Same with Koss. If you had a second baseman that you could plug in every day and Koss spells second and he spells third, you're like, wow, this guy's really valuable. So I, in the same vein as Christian Koss, I like Dom Smith.
Yeah, that's interesting too, because just a week ago I was thinking, you know what? Release Dom Smith. Let him sign with a contender. Let him help that team. I think you're past the playoff roster deadline, right? Because I think they combine that with the trade deadline. So if you're not on a team by the trade deadline, I don't think you can make the playoff roster. And that's the 40 man. So the thing is, about a week ago, I was saying, release him. Let him go to a team and do something with a contender and let him contribute and then maybe get a ring, because you're still going to get a ring even though if you're not on the playoff roster and they go on to win the World Series. But that's an interesting point. If you really look at the roster breakdown, we should probably do a really good roster breakdown at the end of the season and figure out how many spots will be truly available at the end of the season going into next season, because that'll be interesting to see. Because if you do have a spot to have Dom Smith on your roster again, he's hitting 281, only 30 strikeouts and 160 plate appearances.
Yeah.
He's making contact and he's got a little bit of power too. And he's a veteran. He's 30 years old. And so if you've got him, you can platoon him with Eldridge and break Eldridge in a little bit. And then you could just move Devers to that full-time DH role, not have to worry about him playing first base. And if you've got the spot and you've got a guy like Christian Koss who can cover three infield positions, I think that's a good recipe to kind of hang on to him and see if he wants to stick around next season. Now, he's having such a good season, people are going to be knocking on his door. So it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard at this point to re-sign him for, they got him on a minor league deal.
Right.
So you're not going to get him back for cheap. He's going to go somewhere else and probably get a 2-year deal or so. Yeah. Again, only 30 years old. So
he may make more money than they're willing to pay. But I think with the young kid, you should be willing to pay some money for an investment in who is behind him, just in case the kid struggles. Bryce Eldridge is going to be what, 21, 22 years old next year?
21.
Yeah. So, all right. What's your next one?
All right. My next one is something that's been in the news lately. And I'm really enjoying, and we were hoping this would happen, but I'm really enjoying the Giants farm system getting a nice little boost. They came in preseason ranking 28 out of 30 teams, and now the midseason re-ranking that they usually do, MLB's got them at number 18, so they jumped 10 spots. The biggest mover, the most improved jump out of any team in the rankings were the Giants, and it's nice to see, because again, we were just talking about Eldridge. Last week, we talked about Blade Tidwell. We talked about Jesus Rodriguez, two of the guys that they got in trades at the trade deadline. Then you add in their number their first round draft pick is their number three prospect already, Ben Killen. You got Johnny Level. And then we've got something that we haven't talked about in a really long time. This is going to sound weird. It's going to sound foreign to Giants fans. But we have a very strong prospect outfield. And that's something we don't talk about very often. But you've got...
Wait, Hunter Bishop? He's actually going to make some of them? Oh, sorry.
He's still in AAA. Hunter Bishop is still with us. I keep looking every now and then. I go, he's still there. But he's not knocking on the door, but he's still there. Outfielders, Dakota Jordan, who's our number six prospect. And then you've got Gilbert, who came up for us, last week, and we got him in the trade with the Mets.
Bo Davidson as well is the other one you were thinking.
And Bo Davidson, another strong outfielder. So you've got a strong outfield prospect core. Let me pull up our rankings, not Major League Baseball's full rankings, but I'm going to look at.
I got them open here.
Oh, okay. All right.
Eldridge won. Yeah. Josuar Gonzalez, number two, but he's really young.
He's really young. A lot of these guys we're not going to see next year. That's the whole thing.
Gavin Killen. Is it Killen or Kylan?
Sure. I haven't heard many people actually say his name. I didn't watch the draft, so those are one of those ones. You don't really know necessarily how they're pronounced until you actually hear a broadcaster say it.
I mean, it'd be nice to see him pull a Robbie Thompson and just come right to the team next year. And then Johnny Level, shortstop. So Level and Gonzalez are high risers in this draft, as well as Bo Davidson, who is five. Wiz, who was two, I think, earlier this season, is now dropped to six. And then Dakota Jordan, Drew Gilbert, Rainer Arias is nine, and then the right-handed pitcher that they got, Blake Tidwell, is 10.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of really good names in there, and my favorite, where I'd like to see him do something, but Maui Ahuna.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's my favorite, Islander baseball name that I've ever seen. But he's a shortstop prospect. I'm seeing him at number 13.
How many Moana jokes do you think he gets from like his teammates?
Way too many. people probably drop off stuffed hey-hays in his locker, the little chicken. So that's another therapeutic bright spot that I think of. And again, it's disparaging though when you do look at the years next to their names, what their ETA is to get to the majors, and you've got Gonzalez at 2030. You've got, Killen or Kylan at 2029, Johnny on the Level at 2029. You've got Bo Davidson and Dakota Jordan. They're predicted 2027, so not too far away. Drew Gilbert's already up. Rainer Arias, 2028. So not a lot of guys that are looking like they're going to be, contributing a ton next year. Possibly Jesus Rodriguez. He was the catcher that the Giants got in the Yankees trade, right, for Duvall. But he's a guy who's been battling a little bit of an oblique issue, shoulder issue and stuff. So he's been kind of held down to DH right now and not really catching. But he'll probably make some noise in spring training and try to push for the backup job. Mm-hmm. That's one of my therapeutic bright spots. It brings me happiness. I go to my happy place. I think of our minor league system that's starting to climb up. Because I know with Farhan, that was kind of a big deal for him. He really wanted to build a farm system, started to, and then it just took a lot of steps backwards. Mm-hmm. So after Buster's first draft, to already have a guy that you draft that is already your number three prospect on the list. That's quite impressive. And then making some trades to get some guys to kind of bolster it and get you at the number 18 spot. So maybe some offseason moves, if they end up trading, some more veterans, in the offseason, you could possibly see the farm system boost up even a little bit more.
All right. I wanted to give two shout outs, to two players who, one, I mean, he's the Matt Cain of our time. And if we're being truthful, he's probably a little bit better than Matt Cain, who is Logan Webb. You know, he's got to do it in playoff battles in order to get to Matt Cain level, but probably at least as good of a career so far, maybe even slightly better, in my mind at least, but Cain was great as well. You know, it's got to be frustrating for him to pitch as well as he has, and the Giants are like 12 and 13 in all of his starts.
Yeah.
What it means is they just don't hit for him. There's a lot of unluckiness in there as well. But he came through yesterday. I think what he's proven this year is when you don't get strikeouts, it is a little hard sometimes to be considered like the shutdown guy, because some of what would happen is based off of contact. And if you have some unlucky contact and just the ball getting hit into play, you take away what you can control. But this year he's been able to get more strikeouts, and it's been, I think it has cemented him as like that ace. And what would be nice is next year, knowing that more than likely it'll be Robbie Ray's last year on the club, if they can get a strong number two, and then you have the three starting pitchers, then you worry less about Roop and Birdsong. I don't know how much money they are willing to spend or who's actually out there, but like if you think about Logan Webb, I just think about when Logan Webb and Carlos Rodon were on the same staff, or even Logan Webb and who's the pitcher who's on the Blue Jays now?
Gossman. Yeah.
Like when you had the pitchers back to back like that, and then if you can add in a Robbie Ray, I think you really give yourself a chance to compete even with the poor offense. I think the part of the problem this year is, you know, they have really two guys who they trust to give them good innings. And that's Ray and Webb. And I think you probably do need one more. They thought that was going to be Verlander, and it has been Verlander these last several starts. But I do think a number two would be great. And it's like, do it for your guy, Webb, man. Like, you know, he's been so consistent. Let's line him up so he doesn't have to be so great every single time.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a premium interior paint and primer in one with a top lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. But, and the second thing I wanted to mention from a veteran standpoint is, the more I've seen of Devers, the more I get Devers. I'm not going to compare him to Barry Bonds, by the way. That is not happening here. But when I sure. watch him look at certain pitches and kind of go, okay, like I can probably foul that thing off, but let's wait for two strikes to swing at that pitch. Like he has a really particular zone early on, and sometimes it does cause him to strike out a lot. And maybe if he was a little bit more expansive in his strike zone earlier, then he wouldn't strike out as much, but he also probably would, you know, hit some ground balls up the middle or whatever. He's trying to drive the baseball. I kind of get it now. I was a little worried about the strikeouts and, you know, just seeing him just be so off on some pitches. But when I watched him live, and then I've been watching him a little bit more closely, I think he's really going to have a strong year next year. And right. You have to go back to that Buster Posey trade, and Buster went after it and it actually failed, right? If you look at the big picture, they've probably been one of the bottom five worst teams in baseball since that trade. But if you believe that Devers is going to be a plus hitter for your team, then maybe this was the year that you take that bump and you sort of figure things around Devers. Maybe you have to build your lineup around Devers more than it is today. Maybe next year you look for, you know, some table setters, because, you know, what's going to happen is with that right field and the right center at this park, he's not going to hit 35 home runs. He's probably going to hit 25, but he's also going to hit a lot of doubles, and he's going to hit some balls really, really hard that he's going to have to leg out some doubles.
Yeah.
But you have to build your offense around your best players, and Devers is clearly their best hitter. We've seen enough of Jung-Hoo Lee to kind of know, okay, he's not going to be that guy who's going to hit 15 home runs. He's going to really have to figure out how to be a high average line drive hitter in this park, I think. You've seen Adames. Adames is from the right-handed side. We've only seen a handful of guys be able to dominate from the right-hand side of the batter's box in this park. One of them is Jeff Kent, right? He as a right-handed hitter, maybe nobody's hit better in this park than Jeff Kent.
Right.
So I don't think Adames is necessarily that. But he has also shown, you know, he'll probably hit over 20 home runs. I don't know what he's at right now, but he's probably pretty close as a right-handed hitter, having the bad start that he did. So build your rotation and back up Logan Webb. I would love to see Buster get a dependable number two for next year so Robbie Ray could slide into three. And do what you need to do to build around your best hitter. Who are the players that you can put around this guy so that the offense is not so unathletic, as we like to say? You need to find some athletes to build around Devers, knowing the type of hitter that he is and knowing that he's not going to get on base. He's not going to steal any bases. He's not going to run bases. He's going to need some time off because he's probably not in the best shape like he should be. But still, he's your best hitter. Build around the guy. But I like what I've seen. Even though he has struggled at times, I've seen enough to go, okay, I get it now. I understand what makes him special. And he has had an off, you know, second half of this season in the new park with the new teammates and with you know, playing exclusively in the National League. So there's some learning curves there, and I think I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Where like last month I was like, oh man, they may have got sold a bag of goods here. But then as I watch more closely, I think I see it now.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing too is when you look at the Giants lineup, like tonight, let's look at the Giants lineup tonight. All right, so you've got, and this is Monday night, first game of the Padres series. Casey Schmidt is in there, Jung-Hoo Lee, Christian Kos, Tyler Fitzgerald. There's four athletic guys. Now these guys aren't mashers, save for Casey Schmidt, who's, you know, starting to kind of turn it on and another bright spot for next year. So if Casey Schmidt, you know, we were talking about that conversation earlier. So Casey Schmidt ends up being your second baseman next year. And then you've got Christian Kos. When somebody goes down, you have Kos and Schmidt in the lineup at the same time, which, you know, could be beneficial if they add more to this lineup. But again, they've gotten a little bit more athletic now. Wilmer Flores is in the lineup tonight. takes some of your athleticism down. And then when you've got Devers and Flores in there, but Flores probably won't be here next year. And then when you've got Gilbert in there as well, playing right field tonight, Fitzgerald is playing right field. Gilbert has the night off. But if you add Gilbert in there and let's say you've got, you know, guys like Kos, Fitzgerald, Schmidt, Jung-Hoo Lee, and Gilbert in the lineup. Now you have a lot of athleticism. You can kind of push a little bit more. You can take more chances. And I think that's kind of the frustrating thing watching this team right now is I just don't feel like there's a lot of chances being taken. Just a couple days ago, the Giants had 9 stolen base attempts. Now they had a couple over the weekend, but they had 9 leading coming into that, they had 9 stolen base attempts since June 25th.
Yeah.
I mean,
and they're nine, aren't they like 9 for 9?
9 for 9 in those times. So you got to take those chances. And Melvin's excuse on that, which I understand, was that we're not getting on base enough to take chances. So they're glaring. If you take a chance and you get thrown out, then it's like, well, you wasted your one guy that got on base. But you know, if we can get more hit and runs, more bunts, just some different things to kind of push this lineup along to get into scoring position, to have more chances with runners in scoring position. I know they've been failing at that lately. The odds say if you have more, runners in scoring position chances, that you're going to come through at some point and you're going to score more runs. So that's what I really want to see, is that more athleticism.
Did you have any others that you wanted to add for?
No, those were my two therapeutic ones. I mean, there's definitely more to look at throughout the season. Like, the jockeying for position for the 7th, 8th, and 9, bullpen roles. And we know that right now Randy Rodriguez is there, but do we know? That's the thing. We know he's there, but do we know? Do we know he's going to stick? That's the whole thing. So the rest of the season is kind of, it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch him grow and see if he can be that guy, because you definitely want Giants fans. We want to go into next season knowing that, okay, we've got a guy, a lockdown guy in the 9th. So if he can finish out with like 12 for 12 on save chances going out the rest of the season and really lock it down, that's going to be comforting for us. And there's a chance, Tyler Rogers comes back. He's going to be a free agent in the offseason, unless the Mets lock him up. But he liked his time in San Francisco. And even when he left, he said, I'd love to come back and play in San Francisco. So there's a chance he comes back and ends up being your 7th or 8th guy. So I'm kind of watching that. I like the bullpen battles. And I want to see if Ryan Walker can still, continue to come around and be that guy.
All right. This wasn't necessarily on our rundown, but I saw the Twitter fallout over some comments that Eliot Ramos made, and probably not the best way to state what he was trying to state. In a sense, he was trying to back up his manager. There is a frustration maybe over Bob Melvin being so cool, calm, and collected as the Giants are losing all these games and not yelling and screaming and asking stuff of people. And here's a quote by Ramos. He said, "Outside people don't know anything. That's the type of person he is. That doesn't mean he's not a great manager. When we're winning, everyone is on our side. Now it's like all the fans are against us and all that. I don't get it. We're here and we know what's going on. We know what we're feeling. We know what we're working for, but fans are going to be fans. We can do nothing about it." What do you think about those comments?
I mean, you can do something about it, right? You can't do nothing about it. I mean, play better. I don't know. That's the thing. Yeah, Giants fans are going to be hard because we were tied for the Dodgers in June for first place. So, yeah, Giants fans are going to be hard because they saw what was in grasp. And to see it fall apart like this, slowly crumble. It fell to earth like a meteor, and it was historic. I mean, this is a historic collapse. How bad they've been playing at home. So if you're playing badly and losing 12 in a row at home in front of those fans,
the building is pretty full.
The building's full. They're going to be pissed off still. I went to 2 games this year. You and I went to 2 games this year together. And they were competitive in one of the games, but not in the other one. And that was the beginning of the collapse, because we saw games 1 and 2 for Rafael Devers against Cleveland. So, it's kind of tough. You can do something about it. You can get better. Everybody can get better. Everybody could play better. I don't know. Are there excuses? I don't know. I mean, you get some things here and there happen, like the ball hitting second base the other day that could have been easily turned into a double play by the Giants. You're going to get some stuff like that, but you and I talked about it. You said, and we had 2 points, and they were both good points. You said, you can't overcome that if you're not hitting the ball. I mean, because that scored two runs and made it a 3-1 ball game. And you kind of feel like, well, there's the hole. The hole is dug.
It feels like they take a 1-run deficit and it absolutely feels like the game is over.
Yeah, exactly. And my point was that, well, you know, and also you trade away two of your bullpen pieces. and so, yeah, it's even more difficult because now you're down 3-1. If you come back and tie it, do you have the confidence to really, you know, shut it down the rest of the game like we did earlier in the season? Earlier in the season, we knew once you get to the sixth inning, we kind of thought, we might give up one run the rest of the game.
So it's the best bullpen in the league by a lot of metrics.
Yeah, and the team was fighting back offensively. Both of those things are gone. So, it's tough. So what can you do about it? I mean, play better baseball. Play more exciting baseball. If you're losing, you know, 5-4 ball games, but you're playing exciting baseball and stealing bases and max effort. And again, I'm not saying these guys have quit. I'm absolutely not saying these guys have quit or done anything like that. But from what I'm seeing visually as a Giants fan, I want to see more just, you know what, playing with a, I don't give a damn attitude. I'm going to go out, bust my butt. We're going to have fun. We're going to play baseball. And I think they've gotten tight. I mean, this team is tight. Yeah. They're searching for things. They're searching for wins. But like we saw yesterday, final game of that series, they won 7-1. Against Tampa Bay and they played a fun game. Christian Kost and Tyler Fitzgerald went back to back. They were having a good time. The dugout was geeked up. So maybe that carries over to the San Diego series. It's possible. And that'd be great if it does, because I just want to see, you know, the team have fun and play hard baseball.
So I wonder from Ramos's perspective, last year, he was the dandy of the team, right? He was their all-star outfielder. He was a great story, not even making the team out of camp and then having to join the team and then making the all-star game. And he's still one of the better hitters on the team this year, but I wonder if he's starting to hear the, or maybe reading quotes about his defense and his base running, because on a team that has very little room for error, he as a player is kind of like the definition of giving away runs in some ways. And I wonder if some of that is he is kind of reading some of the stories and getting frustrated in that way, and then using the Melvin question as a way to maybe strike back a little bit. I get it from his perspective.
Sure.
He's got to be frustrated with how he's playing in some of these games. At the same time, this is a fan base that is dealing with essentially a second half collapse, or at least not being able to put together two halves of baseball for the last 4 years. And he is a part of that these last 2 years. So I would have, you know, I can't, he's going to say what he's going to say. He's an everyday baseball player. He's a professional. But I think choosing to maybe take a shot at fans would probably not be the best thing. And maybe somebody told him already, like, yeah, now that quote's going to sit there and people are going to use it as a way to complain about us. But I get it from his perspective. But at the same time, I think he could have gone about that a little bit better.
Yeah, I think so. And again, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't know what his intention was with that, other than, yeah, hey, people are taking shots at my manager. It's not my manager. People aren't in the clubhouse, you know, so they don't know the situation. I mean, maybe that's a better way to word it. You know, that they're not in here every day. They don't know our conversations. They don't see what we go through before and after the game to discuss situations and to discuss hitting and whatnot with the staff. Mm-hmm. You look at Ramos, you know, first half, he was a .262 hitter with a .766 OPS, second half, .275 with a .659 OPS. No home runs in the second half. All of his home runs were in the first half. You know, and young guy, and still working. And like you said, a frustration of the second year in a row, a second half collapse for this team and for him. He's slowed down in the second half 2 years in a row. And we're waiting to see, not only are we waiting to see the complete season Giants, we're waiting to see the complete season Elliot Ramos as well. You know, I was calling last week for, you know, maybe he's a trade candidate in the offseason. This doesn't, I don't think this changes any of that, obviously. Yeah. And the reason I think so is because maybe defensively with what the Giants have now, maybe he's not a fit for this team. And because you want to move possibly Jung-Hoo Lee to left field, you want to get a solid center fielder. So maybe Ramos is a package deal. He's got 4 years left of control.
And that is the attractive part about if he is going to be trade bait.
And maybe he's a package deal to Cleveland to get Stephen Kwan in center field. And Kwan's got 2 years left of control. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so it's not, you know, I threw that out there to somebody on Blue Sky and they, you know, like, why would Cleveland do that? Well, I mean, if you're throwing Ramos and a couple other players into it and Ramos is going to be your DH and he could use that left field wall in Cleveland, mm-hmm. That's attractive. I mean, it really is attractive. Because again, you've got him for 4 years, so you can see what you have. You're going to lose Kwan maybe in 2 years if you don't lock him up.
Yeah. If they want to lock Kwan up, they will probably keep him.
Sure.
But if that's the goal, if it is not the goal, if they don't see that as the future, then, you know, it could be an option. So by the way, Rob, is feeling the same way as us. He's watching live. Shout out to Rob. Yeah. Says all things aside, I just want the Giants to steal bags. We're with you, Rob. Yeah. We're right there. We'd love to see them steal some bags.
I like to see what he said next, too. He said, imagine an outfield at Oracle of Kwan Lee and Chandler Simpson. I mean, I'd love that, but I don't think Tampa Bay is going to get rid of Chandler Simpson anytime soon. But that dude is fun. I mean, that and that's what, you know, as old school Giants fans, Brett Butler, mm-hmm. and, you know, D. Lou, and all those guys. Seeing those guys on the bases and stealing bags and actually making things happen and some hit and runs. I mean, you can hit and run with Jung-Hoo Lee. He's a contact hitter. So if you could do that more often, I mean, God, that's, you know, that's my baseball heaven. I'll tell you that much, Rob.
All right. The last part of this show, I do have an old guy alley that I want to get to. The last part of this show, I just want to kind of look at a couple of things around baseball. So the first thing, and this is a small thing, and I don't even know if there's any real story here, but Rob Manfred said that if the league expands, it would also likely geographically realign. He's looking to reduce travel for players and create more appealing primetime broadcast windows, such as West Coast teams playing West Coast teams in that 7 p.m. window on the West Coast, East Coast teams playing East Coast teams in that 7 o'clock window on the East Coast. Then you could kind of stack those games up together on specific nights. He said Nashville and Salt Lake City as the possible, or he didn't say this, but it sounds like those are the two top teams in the running for potential expansion sites. We're talking 5 years down the line, more than likely. Yeah. But what do you think about geographic realignment?
You know, I don't know. That's kind of a tough one, because when you look at the MLB, when you look at the map, right, of the United States with MLB teams overlaid on them, it is so heavy east of the Mississippi. So I'm not quite sure how you would do that, because west of the Mississippi, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 of the 30 teams. You'd have to throw in. So, and this is just hypothetical because we don't know exactly how they're going to do it. But if you're looking at splitting this map and going, the American League now is East teams, the National League is now West teams. If you were going to do something like that, now you've got the Mets and the Yankees are both in the American League. The Rays and Marlins are both in the American League now. The Reds and Guardians, Cubs and White Sox. Then in the National League would be like, maybe you look at the Twins, Royals, Rangers, Houston, and then the Rockies and everybody, you know, what, the five California teams
we've got.
Yeah. Arizona, Seattle, expansion team, maybe in Portland, Oregon. That's one that's been thrown around. Salt Lake City is another team that's been thrown around. He did say, you know, the ideal expansion would be a team in the East and a team in the, you know, Rockies, you know, the Rocky Mountain area, mm-hmm. and, you know, Rocky Mountain or West, which would be Portland or Salt Lake City. So I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that other than I'm getting older. Right? I'm enjoying the new playoff format.
Mm-hmm.
Pitch clock. I liked the pitch clock at first. You and I always joke about this as we talk about we're getting older. I like the pitch clock for night games when I'm at home. Those are nice. But I don't like the pitch clock for games that I go to because then the game's over like in 2 hours and 15 minutes, 2 hours and 30 minutes, and then they kick you out of the stadium. So I pay good money to go to a baseball game and they kick you out after 2.5 hours. But I do like changes. And I wouldn't mind seeing something a little bit different if it really cuts down on travel and it makes it so, look, you're going to make an East Coast swing once a year.
Right.
And you're going to be out there for 2 weeks. All right. 2.5 weeks. Okay. That's kind of cool. And then you're going to come back and you're just going to play in the West after that. Yeah. I mean, maybe you're going to get a little more consistently. Maybe you're going to get some consistency. Maybe you're going to get some higher numbers. Maybe you're going to get some better numbers because guys are more comfortable. They're playing in one time zone for the majority of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of enticing. I like the idea of it. I mean, expansion's going to happen. There are going to be two more teams at some point. That's not a question. When is it going to be? That's the question. But it will happen. There will be two more teams. Nashville, I think, is one of the other ones. And yeah. I don't think there's any other teams in the East that are even close to a possibility as Nashville. And I might be overlooking some, but I think Nashville is kind of it. So
the NBA is similarly like this. The NBA doesn't have leagues. They have conferences. So Eastern Conference and Western Conference. And within the Eastern Conference, you have the Atlantic Division, the Central Division, and the Southeast Division. And in the Western Conference, you have the Northwest Division, the Pacific Division, all the California teams plus the Phoenix Suns, and then the Southwest Division. So it would align similarly to how the NBA does it if you went that way. Though yeah. I'm sure people who look at the travel for the NBA probably find flaws in that system as well. But yeah, it's sure. I mean, it's interesting to look at, you know, baseball historically has been so much about history that they don't like changes, but then we have had some changes recently, which fans have accepted. The Mets and the Yankees playing in the American League as sort of, you know, would that be beneficial or would people get upset? Like for instance, like let's say, the Giants would be in the National League if you made the West the National League or the Western Division or whatever. But let's say what if the Giants were all of a sudden in the American League? Would it matter to you that much?
You know, in name only, it's still baseball. There's DH everywhere now, so
yeah, that's what makes it almost like who cares at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so it wouldn't really matter a ton. What I want to see is no matter what they do, I would love to see more divisional play, more, mm-hmm. more play against the Dodgers, more play against the Padres and Rockies and Diamondbacks and less against the Rays and the Yankees and you know what I mean? Like, so when they went, that was my biggest problem lately is when they went to the more balanced schedule is what they mm-hmm. call it, where every team is playing every team in one season. I don't think that matters because you're playing the Yankees three games a year. And what is it that's only for fans? That's only for people who come to the ballpark. If you're a Yankees fan who lives out west, you get to see them come to San Francisco every other year that great. I mean, that I think that's all it does. It doesn't mean like, well, everybody's played everybody the same amount of times. No, they haven't, because we've still played the Dodgers more than we played the A's. We've still played the Dodgers more than we played, the Mariners. So I don't like that part of the schedule. I wish we would go back to, after, if they do a realignment, I'd love to see us just play in our division more often.
By the way, I did see an update to the Ramos quote, and he did clarify that he was really just trying to back up his manager. He loves the fans, but it does sound like there's something inside the clubhouse where these guys are probably having some honest conversations about how to get better, and it's just not helping. But that was the update. So as we sort of figured,
I mean, personally, I wasn't mad at him. I get it. Everybody's frustrated. Right? When you're frustrated, you say things. Ask my wife, you know how it is. When you're frustrated, you say something, you go, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have said that. That was bad.
So let's talk about a little bit about the Brewers, because I read a really good article from Ken Rosenthal about how the Brewers are playing so well. And it kind of like butts up against the idea of what baseball is today, where the analytics dominate. And like certain, if you follow these trends, your team is going to be better. And he basically wrote that the way that the Brewers win ball games, some of it is luck. Some of these things have leaned their way in certain aspects, especially with BABIP and stuff like that. They're just above average in that category. But some of the stuff that he wrote about, I was just like, man, I wish the Giants were more like that. And some of that is, actually, a large part of it is just base running and defense is where they really excel. And they gain runs because of that. The other thing was that they are not actually hitting home runs necessarily like some of the better teams. But when you do those other things, you can make up for it. And their starting pitching is not fantastic either. But their manager, Rosenthal, was writing about how, when some of the younger players do make mistakes, he is able to kind of take them out of games or maybe show a little frustration. And it's sort of the opposite of what we were just talking about with Ramos, where Melvin is more or less kind of treating them like adults and just being like, you know what you did. Go sit in the corner, man. You know that you screwed up. Like, I don't have to tell you or yell at you, which is just a different style, right? It's a different style of manager. But it would be nice when Ramos screws up and gives away runs to just be like, okay, like, you need to take a seat, not as a way to shame him, but just as a way to say, everybody is kind of even here. And we need to allow for players to get the opportunity to get in spots if other people make mistakes, like, healthy competition or whatever you could say. And it sounds like that is the chemistry and everything with Milwaukee. But it is nice to see a team like that really be a top baseball right now, because the other story is the Dodgers. And the Dodgers are still, I think they're still, like, if you want to bet on World Series odds, like, the Dodgers are still kind of in the National League head and shoulders above. But it is nice to see a team like the Brewers don't have a lot of money, small market, and they're able to win baseball games like this. And it shows you, like, hey, maybe the model that the Giants are trying to follow, which was Buster's model that he created at the beginning of the season, pitching and defense. And maybe we need to tell Buster he needs to throw the base running in there too. But you can still do it that way. Like, the Brewers are the kind of the living and the breathing way that's happening. So I'm happy that they're playing well. Now, when it comes to the playoffs, we'll see. I don't think they've won a playoff series in forever. So they will have to show that brand of baseball works in the playoffs. But I did like to see this team that is kind of not on anybody's radar, other than just being a competitive team, being the best team in baseball right now.
Right. And And honestly, I think that's what the Giants are trying to build. When Buster Posey took over, I think that's kind of his vision. You can't do it in one season. It's really, really difficult when you've got a 26-man roster, active roster, and you've got a 40-man roster of other players. You're going to have turnover, and you're going to have guys that don't pan out, and you're gonna make some mistakes here and there. So I think that's what the Giants really want to build towards, and that was the feeling I got in the opening press conference. You know, being more athletic, taking more chances, being instinctual, and I think that's what the Brewers are. They're an instinctual team. You go out there and you play baseball, and you play baseball hard. And if you screw up, you screw up. You move on, and you wear it. I mean, that's what we talk about in baseball all the time, right? You wear it, and then you move on, and you get better. So I think, you know, watching the Brewers and watching what they're doing, yeah, they still screw up. I mean, the ninth inning the other night, they have an error that opened up the ball game, and they still were able to kind of fight back because they're a scrappy team. And that's what the Giants felt like at the beginning of the season, mm-hmm. and things kind of fell apart a little bit. But I think that's what the Giants are trying to build. It'd be lovely to see the Brewers knock off the Dodgers in the past, right? Didn't they sweep them this year? I think they played like 6 or 7 games against the Dodgers and they swept them. So that's impressive.
They don't have the biggest lead in baseball right now as far as the divisions are concerned. The right. Tigers are a half a game higher with 8.5 games ahead of the Guardians. But they are eight games ahead of the Cubs. And the Cubs
just collapsed.
I mean, yeah.
They've just fell apart. Kyle Tucker is not hitting. He's actually got benched second game of the doubleheader today. It got washed out, but they were going to bench him and then possibly tomorrow's game as well. It's gotten that bad for Kyle Tucker.
The positioning in the American League wild card is going to be really interesting as they go down. The Red Sox, Mariners, and Yankees are all within a half a game of each other for those top three spots. The Cubs are still a healthy 4.5 game lead ahead of the Reds, or a top, like they would have to lose 4.5 games to fall out of the wild card. Yeah. So they still have some space there. And the Giants are 6 games back of the number 3 Mets in the wild card,
which is pretty amazing to me. I mean, the Mets have been falling apart too, and that's helped the Giants big time. Again, the Giants don't have the defined bullpen that they had, you know, a couple of weeks ago. They're still struggling offensively. So I know some Giants fans are like, hey, we're still only 6 games back of the wild card. Simmer down. I don't. I would turn my sights towards next season, and I'd go back and listen again to our therapeutic session portion of this podcast, just so you kind of know what to look forward to and find that inner peace and come to the acceptance that this probably is not the year we're going to sneak into the playoffs.
We may have to change the name of this podcast in the next few years to Kyland Eldridge.
Yeah, that's there you
hope.
Go. Yeah.
My hope is that they're that good that we want to change the name of the pod from Thompson to Clark to Kyland Eldridge. All right, let's end the show with a little bit of old guy alley. I'm trying to think of the last time I ever got into an actual fist fight and like a serious one. I don't even know if I've maybe like I remember being in Tahoe when I was like in like the fourth or fifth grade, and
yeah,
I was like hanging out, like looking at toys or something, and some dudes came up to me and were like, I don't, you know, they were just kind of being goofballs.
Yeah.
And one of the guys like kind of was like picking on me for no reason, and I just kind of like shoved him into the thing, and he had to book it, but I got like really emotional because I was like, what the hell, like,
yeah, oh, right,
you're in this area. And but I say that to say this, which is I was at a used auto dealership on last weekend, and Crystal had bought a third car. you have many automobiles, so you've been in this position.
Too many right now.
Specific kind of automobile, so you guys really know what you want. This wasn't that. We were just looking for an inexpensive third car as we were teaching the kids, the twins, how to drive. And one of them will probably get his license, I would say, in the next 4 to 6 months. So he's pretty close. Nice. And so she buys the car. It's it's an older car. It's pretty nice car. But when she's making the deal, you know, they talk about like, oh, well, what happens if, you know, we find something wrong with it? And he kind of has his little thing. So we take it to get the 120 point,
the inspection.
Inspection.
Yeah.
And what we find out is that now this is Pep Boys. It's not my local guy, my local auto shop guy. And they were like, oh, yeah, you know, there's about $4,000 in things you need to do to it. So we were like, huh, this is wild. Like, so Crystal calls the guy back and he's like, well, just bring the car to me and I'll take it to my guy. And, you know, we'll see. And so I was home, so I took it to him. And like I've not been in any of these conversations at all. I was just hearing things through her. I let her handle that whole situation. And then so I go and I hand the keys to the guy and I'm like, all right, I'm here to drop the car off. I was just going to go walk back home. It's like a mile and a half away. And so he looks at me and he goes, well, what do you want me to do? And I was like, you talked to my wife, right? You guys were texting. She said to drop the car off. You're going to take it to a shop and get it looked at. And he's like, yeah, but does that come out of my pocket? And I was like, I didn't have this conversation with you. You talked about like, what did you guys agree upon? Like, do you have the texts? Like, you know, I'm kind of the middle. I'm not in this at all. I'm just handing the car off. He's really aggressive. Mm-hmm. Just like so aggressive for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
And so he goes, he just kept saying like, what do you want me to do? Like, am I on the hook for this? Like, I sold the car to you guys. Like, and I was like, well, okay. But you gave my wife the impression that if something was wrong, you know, we could come and collaborate and problem solve and X, Y, and Z. And so he just is so disrespectful. I had it. Now, this is an older man. He's probably, I don't know, 15 to 20 years older than me.
So you didn't want to drop him.
Well, there was nothing physical that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But if he was like younger and my age, I imagine we would have got nose to nose just because of how aggressive he was. But I pulled back. I did not pull back on my words, but I was trying to de-escalate at the same time.
Yeah.
And so finally I said, you are a businessman. You have sold a lot of cars. You just told me you've been here for 20 years. You're telling me that you've never had a situation where you sell a car and someone is unhappy with their purchase. And he's like, yeah, but there's this deal that they pay me. And then if they want to return the car, then they got to pay an extra $500. And I was like, okay, I get that. But to me, that sounds like a ripoff. It doesn't sound like a great, great deal, especially when I'm coming to you the day after. And so that, I'm sure that bothered him a little bit.
Yeah.
And so we were haggling, got to the point of where I told Chris, I was like, look, either we eat this and we just take it because he's being like, he's being very stubborn about this, or I'm going to get it to the point of where we're handing this car in and he's just giving us our money back.
Yeah.
Like, well, then see if you can get our money back. And so we're arguing, and I look him right in the eye and I go, if you tell me right now that you sold this car in good conscience, that a 16-year-old who's a new driver is going to be able to drive this safely, and you had no idea that there were any problems with the brakes. And he goes, well, what do you mean brake problems? I was like, yeah, they said it needs new brakes. And he's like, were they grinding? I was like, no, because if 16-year-old's not going
to, they don't have to be
when the brakes are going to be. That's if he hears that, we're already past due.
Yeah.
And so I go, if you can tell me that, shake my hand, look me in the eye, I will walk away and say, we'll go get the car fixed somewhere else. He wouldn't do it. It was like I checked him on his integrity. And then he tried to call me out on like some other lies. Cause what I think what he thought is that, and this may have happened to him in the past, is somebody buys a car from him, takes it on vacation and goes on a joyride and then brings it
absolutely
back,
yeah, and a couple weeks later,
right,
and, yeah, sure,
and so
not like you went home and started cutting the brake lines or anything and brought it back the next day.
And so he goes how many miles did you drive it? And I was like 10. So he goes and he checks the thing and he's looking, he's like oh, 9.1. I was like, yeah, see. And he's like checking other things. And he was trying. I think his biggest fear was that he was getting conned rather than
absolutely
he was doing this.
Makes
conning.
Sense.
So after sure. I stayed on it. I was not going to pay the $500 that he wanted me to pay to be able for him to buy our car back from us and this and that. Yeah, yeah. So I stood my ground. He finally gave us the money back. He even wanted to post-date the check because the check that Crystal gave him, it had already cashed on our end, but on his end was still showing pending. And so he looks at me as he's signing the check back to us and he's like, do I have to put today's date? And I was like, yep. Mm-hmm. And he puts today's date, and like begrudgingly gives us the check. And so
should have said, yeah, this is a business. You can cover it.
Right. And so the other thing I think he was very fearful about, rightfully so, this is a small business. He lives and dies by his Yelp reviews. And I was like, look, Crystal is going to tell everybody in the world about this experience. And I threw the Nextdoor card out and I go, look, I'm a co-founder at Nextdoor. We have reviews, local reviews in Sunnyvale about this stuff too. And I will make sure that those get seen by the right people. So he was, I think he sort of figured out it was going to be more painful for him to argue with us than to just give us the money back. And he knew he was going to be able to sell the car at some point, probably
sure
for the same amount of money. Maybe they
fix the brakes after that too, which would be nice, and then resell it. So then
after everything, we had like 20 minutes as I was waiting for Crystal to bring some of the paperwork. And he started telling me about his coming over to the U.S. I think he was born in the Republic of Georgia. So he said he came around the year 2000 and we were just talking and like, I got it. Like I completely understood kind of where he was coming from. And I said, you know, if you would have talked to me like this, we could have gotten to a solution. And if you took it to your guy and you're like, yeah, Pep Boys is overcharging you, it's probably a little bit closer to $900 to get the work done, we would have been fine. We weren't asking you to
split the price or
whatever. We could have compromised in some way. But because you came at me so hard, it made me want to get my money back. And which is what he agreed upon, which is what I commend him for, because, you know, he could have even tried to haggle at the last minute, but I stood strong. And then you saw the other car that Crystal picked up afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
So just the buying used cars, man.
That's why I have Harveen.
Yes.
Call Harveen. And, I'll be sitting there working with somebody. I'll call him up and I'll text him and I go, hey, they want to do this. And he goes, absolutely not. I said, yeah, I didn't think so. Didn't feel right.
what a great hookup that is. It's so amazing. All right. So you're going to be out of town next week. We probably won't do a show. If I can put something together with a guest, I will definitely try. On the front of We Want Winners, we just did a show last night. I'm gonna be filling for you if you got to throw Jimmy G into some games this year. By the way,
yeah, I don't. Stetson is looking really. Yeah,
I was wondering if he was actually gonna be the sneaky choice there.
I think so. I don't know. I still think Jimmy G is gonna be your number two. But Stetson is kind of a stud, man. So they're fighting for it.
Yeah, it'll be.
I don't think Jimmy's going to want to be a number three, though.
No, I don't think so either. Well, I don't know. Does he even want to play, or does he just want to have the spotlight of actually being an NFL player, which probably helps the date in life a little bit?
Yeah. That's true.
So we did We Want Winners. That is up in both YouTube and in our podcast feed. Brian and I will be back on Thursday, I believe. That's written in pencil. Possibly all of the new rebranding for the combined Warriors Valkyrie show, at least in the podcast feed. We'll still have the separate segments all around, all over YouTube. There'll still be a Valkyries stuff and Warrior stuff. But on the actual podcast network, we are combining the two shows for Warriors and Valkyries just because it's easier for me to produce that way. But we'll have timestamps. If you're only interested in the Valkyrie stuff, I'll let you know when that part is. And if you're only interested in the Warriors, I'll let you know where you could fast forward to. So we're just doing it just for my own process. It's just going to be easier on me to do it that way. But we got some really cool new branding, really cool new logos. Nice. I won't announce it until we do the next show. It's almost all done. I don't want to jinx it. So, but it's really cool. I love the way that it came out, and I will shout out the person who did it and his website. Nice. when we talk about it. So lots of stuff coming on this feed. Even if Brad and I don't do an episode next week, we will still have tons of stuff. And like I said, I will try to find somebody to come on with us. So, all right, everybody. Thanks to Rob, who was hanging out in the live stream. Thanks to everybody who's listening on the audio feed. We appreciate you. If you can throw that, you know, that 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, and we will read that on air. By the way, again, not reading the bad ones. So if you want to write a bad one, not reading yours.
Well, maybe we take the, you know, or maybe we take the bad ones, we throw it into AI and we tell it, make it good.
Yeah, there you go.
See where we come up.
There you go. All right. For Brad, I'm Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
Peace.